We are starting the 10th session today of the Connections Program, this workshop on a Torah approach to emotional wellness. And this is a big session because we're actually wrapping up on interpersonal connection today. This is the end of our second module. Next time, we're session 11, we're going to be starting the module on spiritual connection. So we're really, really moving through at a great pace. So in terms of noticing our disconnection from others, which we talked about last time, I'm hoping that people have been charting and doing the exercise, and hoping that people got high numbers. The goal of our work is to get high numbers and to notice many times that we are disconnecting from others, not because it's a goal to disconnect from other people, of course, but because it is a typically people do disconnect from others, and it's important to notice when we do so, and to increase our sensitivity. The goal of last week's session was to increase our sensitivity to our own disconnection from other people. So to that end, the more sensitive we are, the more we'll notice that we disconnect on a regular basis. Today I wanted to introduce the core concepts in Interpersonal Connection Part 4, which is about remaining connected to others, remaining connected when other people irritate us and do things that we don't like, and then talk to you about what that's about, specifically what it means to remain connected to other people, and introduce another exercise. So last week we were talking about a lot of important questions about connections as it relates to other people, about interpersonal connection. We asked, why does connection require holding back anger or irritation and continuing to bestow goodness when other people do things that are upsetting? We also talked, right, why would we want to do that? Like, what's the point of continuing to be kind to other people when they irritate us and they anger us, or when they do things that are wrong? I mean, if people do something to me that's wrong, it's just, they shouldn't do that, and it's just not nice of them by all standards, by any standard, then why should I continue to be nice to them? So from a connection standpoint, we would want to. So that required some explanation, which we talked about. We talked about specifically what we said is that the goal of connection is not happiness. The goal of connection is to have relationships. Relationships are the reason why we're on this earth. And in order to have relationships, we have to be ready to give to people and to connect to them even when they do things that we don't like. Now, of course, we talked about last week about, you know, protecting oneself, and there have to be, you know, certain places. So there are certain times when we have to make sure that we're not going to be literally injured. But for all intents and purposes, most of the time people stop giving to others is out of principle, not out of protection, almost always, in fact. We also talked about, do we have to bury our negative feelings in order to remain connected? And we actually said no. In fact, one of the goals here is to experience negative feelings even more and to become more sensitive to them, not to bury them. The goal is to be able to experience those negative feelings and to hold them, though, and not to lose control. That's really where we want to go. We also talked about providing feedback and constructive criticism for people. Is there no place in the world of interpersonal connection? And of course, the answer to that was no as well. And the reason why is because most people, when they want to have a relationship with you, if you're in a connection state of connection with them, they want to have that feedback. The question is, under what circumstances do they want that, and in what way do they want that feedback? So the point is not to just take a, what I think it's stiff upper lip is the phrase that they use. The point is not just to grin and bear it. That would be an even better way of saying it. The point is to remain in control of our emotions and to put relationships first. And I think that was clear. But we tabled a discussion about a couple of additional questions. I want to address those additional questions because they're fundamental to having relationships with other people when those people don't do what we want. First, what should somebody do when we have a conflict that arises between inner connection and interpersonal connection? Sometimes it seems that taking care of another person and putting the relationship first actually is sacrificing my body because he or she can't take it. So in theory, this is a good question. It's possible, in theory anyway, that somebody only has experiences, that somebody only experiences an alignment of interest with other people. It's possible that you have store owners and they need money, and we need their products, and they need exactly as much as we need, and we're happy to give them as much as we have. Or it's possible that you walk into a bank and the bank teller is bored. They're twiddling their thumbs. And we need to process a check. So there's an alignment of interests. It's also possible that you have an employee and the employee needs money, and the employer needs the employee to do stuff. So they have an alignment of interests. If the world worked this way, then it would seem that there would be, you know, peace on earth forever. But the reality is that it's complicated. In practice, we have conflicts. We have conflicts between what we want and what other people want. And they are going to happen. Store owners might want more money than we'd like to pay. Sometimes the bank teller, they're not bored. They're overworked. And we need our request processed in a shorter amount of time than they have. Sometimes an employee might not be doing their job the way that an employer needs. Or they might ask for more money than the employer thinks is worthwhile given the amount of benefit that they're having. That's life. That's the reality of life is, you know, and I didn't even speak about spousal relationships where there's very often conflicts. One party wants the other to do more of something or do less of something or to take more of an active role or to back off, and the other party is not interested in doing that. There's conflicts. So whenever we're entering the world of interpersonal connection, it's scary because it involves our bodies and our souls making a joint, united decision to stop being selfish, to get outside of ourselves and to focus on other people and to realize that there are going to be those conflicts, but to put those relationships first. The goal of interpersonal connection is for our body and our soul to jointly choose to remain connected to other people when they don't do what we want, and to get outside of ourselves and to pour our whatever we've got into those relationships, into other people. In other words, it means being committed to other people, whether or not they provide for us personally. That doesn't necessarily mean a sacrifice. I shouldn't say it like that. It doesn't necessarily mean a begrudging sacrifice on the part of the body or the soul. It doesn't mean that the soul has to give up on its vision for the body and be upset about it. It doesn't mean that the body has to give up on its creature comforts and be upset about it. It could be that the two of them give up on their vision and or comforts, happiness in the moment, in order to create a relationship with somebody else. And they do so lovingly. And that's what interpersonal connection is about. It's not about a conflict. Well, it's about navigating a conflict, if you will, between interconnection and interpersonal connection, in that the goal here is to get our body and the soul onto the same page. If our soul can guide our body to be self-sacrificing to a reasonable degree, and our body can accept that guidance from the soul and to recognize that ultimately, people are happiest when they have relationships, long-term connected relationships with other people, then that's where we're heading. However, it's possible for something to become interconnection, to focus on and provide for other people's needs when we're not ready to do so. And I've seen people do this. For example, somebody who's being sexually abused or physically abused or even emotionally abused, they might feel a lot of love for their partner. They might be interpersonally connected. They might give to that partner. But if they're failing to protect their body, it's actually interpersonal. Well, it's interconnection because their body and their soul typically in those situations are not on the same page because they can't take it. It's such a difficult thing for the body to take And it's so difficult for the soul to give up on its vision for the body because it's being abused. There's another facet there, which is that it's actually not even interpersonal connection. Because if somebody's a punching bag for somebody else, that's not what the other person needs. It seems that you're giving the other person an opportunity to punch you, but of course that's not what that other person needs. It might be what they want, but people don't have a need to abuse other people. So providing them with that opportunity is not connection. So that's another aspect of it here, which is important. The point is that there are some times where we have to withhold providing for other people's needs in order to take care of ourselves. But an overarching goal here, firstly, those circumstances are rare, fairly rare. And secondly, an overarching goal here is to try to rise up above it and to move ourselves to a place where we can really put other people first. However, if we have to stop taking care of somebody else because it's just not good for us, it's not safe for us, and it doesn't even have to be, you know, sexual, physical, or emotional abuse. It could be just that we're not ready. I'll give you an example. Somebody needs 8 hours of sleep, and a friend calls them up and says, you know, I need to be picked up from the airport. And they're coming in, and it's past their bedtime. Well, it could be in that circumstance. They're not going to be able to make up the sleep. It doesn't work for their schedule. It's going to throw them off. It's going to get in the way of their dreams, and they're going to be extremely uncomfortable, and they can't do it. In a situation like that, there is no room for guilt. There is no room for shame. If our soul determines that we have a need, we have to provide for that need, period. And not taking care of ourselves because of guilt or shame about what other people need, that's disconnection to ourselves. I spoke to Rabbi Kellerman about this, and what came up in the conversation is that if you're sacrificing yourself to the extent, beyond the extent that you should, in order to provide for somebody else, and you're giving to them, you're actually not doing them a favor, because you shouldn't have been the one taking care of them. They didn't really need you to pick them up from the airport, and that's not really a benefit for them. That already gets into spiritual connection and the idea that there's a spiritual force guiding and aligning people's interests on some level. So a preview of coming attractions. But that's definitely something to consider here. And we talked about this during interconnection, that there's a tendency for people in the West, in Western culture, to neglect our basic physical needs and certainly our basic spiritual needs. And that it results in undermining connection at all levels. So even if our body feels bad and would prefer not to have a specific need, if we have a need present, then we have to do everything that we can to provide for ourselves, even if it requires not taking care of other people. There's a saying in the Talmud, in Pirkei Avos, actually, about this, which is, if I am not for myself, who will be for me? Imeina nili mili. So similarly, once we've made a decision about something, just as a general point, let's say we decide that we can't take care of somebody else's needs. It's disconnection not to stick to that point. You know, it might become a sitting with the stress exercise that we talked about in the second session. If we're second-guessing ourselves and saying, I don't know, should I do it, should I not do it, should I not do it, should I do it, that's interconnection. That's inner disconnection. Because it either involves the body trying to make its own decisions or the soul renegotiating once the body has raised and expressed a need. And it's very, from an interconnection standpoint, very unhealthy. But when we're withholding connection, so to speak, from other people, we have to make sure that it is in the service of connection, not just convenience. So it's our soul stepping up to protect our body from hardship. Not trying to cause people to anger us, pain, or creating distance in our relationships from them, because that could be another purpose. And it's important for us to be aware of what's really going on. So, in sum, there are going to be conflicts of interest. It is going to be hard to navigate. Those are great opportunities to flex our muscles and pull ourselves into the worlds of interconnection and interpersonal connection. Some people they can't donate a kidney. It's just not possible. They either have a disease, or they have young children at home, or they're in a period of their life where it's not possible for them to do it, or they just are so averse to pain, or they're terrified because of something happened to them when they were younger, or so many reasons why they can't do it. But we can do what we can. We can certainly get somebody a get well card. We can certainly try to help people in a different way. So again, to summarize, when we're deciding how to handle these conflicts between interconnection and interpersonal connection, a good question to ask is, how can I maximize the extent to which my actions are serving interconnection, and also trying to maximize the extent to which it's interpersonal connection? The goal here is relationships with ourselves and with others. Those are the overarching principles to use when answering these kinds of questions and when faced with these sorts of situations. Okay. Another question which is important to discuss is whether it's ever appropriate to display anger or irritation to others in order to help other people grow. Sometimes people will put on a show, so to speak, of anger or irritation in order to help other people meet their obligations or other people to grow. Sometimes you see parents who do this to children, or teachers who do this to students. Sometimes people do it to each other. They sort of scare other people into compliance in order to help them to do what's right. So just to clarify what this question means, if we're playing the role of an educator or a mentor, either as a teacher or a parent or even a friend trying to help another friend, it often seems like it could help to fake anger or irritation in order to get a point across. And in theory, this is actually correct. It's not disconnection, because we're really trying to take care of the other person. We could be displaying what looks like disconnection just to help instill in a message, but really it's an act of love and giving and caring and relationship. But displaying disconnection, even if it's not real, it's very risky. And this is not a good recommended practice, especially not in our generation at this point in time when people disconnect for really any reason. We talked about this last week a bit. The standards of disconnection are so high in Western culture. In other words, it takes so much before something registers as disconnection in Western culture that most people, they habitually disconnect throughout their day without even being aware of it. So if we're displaying anger or irritation intentionally, there's a very significant risk that we're going to be disconnected and maybe not even be aware of it or not know it. The other thing, though, is that sometimes people display disconnection for educational purposes, to help others. And what actually happens is it leads to disconnection, real disconnection, because the emotional states for us are inherently quite fickle. People, human beings, have emotions that fluctuate. And often people's emotions chase after or move after how they feel. We say in psychotherapy all the time that action precedes motivation, that people's motivation, their feelings, is it ever appropriate to display anger or irritation to others in order to help them grow? So just to clarify this question, if we're playing the role of an educator, either as a teacher or a parent or even a friend or a partner, and we're trying to convey a message to somebody, can we try to fake it that we're angry just to get their attention, to get the point across, to get them to listen to us? So in theory, the answer is that it's not disconnection. It could be that we're just displaying disconnection, apparent disconnection, just to instill a message in somebody else, in which case it could be really an act of love, an act of connection, an act of giving in relationships. But displaying disconnection, even if it's not real, it's very risky. There's three reasons why. Number one, in the Western world, disconnection is so rife, and people habitually disconnect at very high levels. We talked about how the standards are very high and that it takes a lot for something to register as disconnection on the Western radar. And by contrast, the Torah approach, a connections approach, is much lower. There's much lower threshold. So if we're displaying anger and irritation, there's a very significant risk that it's actually going to be disconnection even though we're not aware. A second facet is that it can lead to actual disconnection. Our emotional states are very fickle, and people's emotions follow how they behave. We say in psychotherapy that action precedes motivation. People's motivation, their feelings, follows how they act. And if we're acting in an angry way, we could easily start to feel angry very quickly. But the most important and third reason is because interpersonal connection today is so tenuous. It's very common, unfortunately, tragically, for relationships, people have close and committed relationships, sometimes for months or years, and sometimes even for decades, and for those relationships to unravel, to fall apart at the seams and unravel, and often families are involved, kids are involved, these are blood relatives. And people today, one of the reasons for this is that people today just cannot tolerate disconnection. We can't tolerate displays of disconnection. Our interconnection is so weak that most people can't take criticism, they can't take irritation, they can't take anger, and those displays, even if they're not heartfelt, and even if they're coming from a loving place, they can cause untold damage to other people, and they can destroy our relationships. So technically speaking, it's not disconnection to fake anger or irritation in order to help other people to grow, but the drawbacks are far greater than the potential positives, and it's too risky, so I do not recommend it. Okay, another question to discuss before we get into what it means to remain connected to others is, how do we handle this when we feel so irritated or angry that we just feel like, I can't help but disconnect from somebody else. I'm going to blow my stack. So first of all, remember that remaining connected to others does not mean that we don't feel irritation. It doesn't mean that we don't feel anger or pain. The goal here is not to be emotionless. In fact, we can be very, we talked about this last week, we can be very extremely upset inside, yet connected to other people. This is because interpersonal connection only occurs in some ways when we have negative emotions inside and we wear them on our sleeve. It's the behavioral apparency, the behavioral manifestation of those negative emotions, and being angry, upset, irritated, those are the ones that are a problem. So the concern here is not how we feel, it's how we act. But we discussed this last time that interpersonal connection is any behavioral manifestation of anger or irritation, regardless of how small. So how do we handle this? Because it's a very tall order. The soul needs to appreciate how enormous of a task this is for the body. This is one of the hardest, well, for me anyway, and for a lot of other people, this is one of the hardest aspects of the entire Connections program. And our soul needs to appreciate that sometimes our body is going to feel like it's going to blow its stack. To remain interpersonally connected and give to other people and to be kind to them and civil and not to voice frustrations or disappointments without, you know, it being really truly in the service of creating greater connection and relationship is a very, very, very difficult task, very hard for the body to do. And it's important, one of the ways to help the body along is by the soul validating and appreciating what the body is going through. When the soul realistically perceives that the body is having a hard time and says to the body, I know it's hard, I'm here for you, I'm here with you, the body has an easier time doing it. The body has an easier time maintaining composure because it's not alone. And it's that act of the soul providing for the body's needs or validating, at least hearing out the body, letting it raise issues, letting it ask questions, and letting it discuss what's on its mind, and hearing the body out, providing that self-compassion, that self-love is a key tool to remaining connected to other people. In other words, when the soul realistically perceives that the body is struggling to maintain composure and connected, its chief task is to connect to the body and to provide for the body's needs. Making this practical, when the body feels disconnected, it needs to have more connection to the soul, not less. So if you're about to lose it, or if you've already done so, try to get back on track and minimize the damage by the soul bestowing kindness and grace to the body. Extra sleep, exercise, diet, something fun, give it spiritual activity, provide validation, provide or tolerate the body's idiosyncrasies with love and patience, that great exercise from session 4, and continue to bestow kindness and benevolence upon the body and to give it the encouragement and the strength that it needs in order to get back on track. Okay. All of that from the beginning of our session till now has been an introduction. And now I want to talk about interpersonal connection part 4, which is remaining connected to others. It's not a huge segment, but it is important. How do we remain connected to other people? Well, there are two main components, and this is in handout 10A in your documents. There's guarding against disconnection, and then there's continuing to bestow goodness when we're irritated. And those are two different things. Guarding against disconnection. So we talked about this, but to give a little more clarity, disconnection involves pulling back from a relationship in any way when people do something that we don't like. So this component of the connections paradigm seems to call for what we would say a passive exercise because it's not doing something, right? Not pulling back. But that's true, but the real way to do this, the best way to do this, is to be active about it. It's kind of like anything in life. So much easier to do something than to not do something. So the only hope we really have is to remain actively on guard. A metaphor here, which Rabbi Kellerman shared with me, is like volleyball, the game volleyball, you know, the white ball with the net in the middle. So if you go on YouTube later on and check out a video of people playing volleyball, you'll see that there's the ball going back and forth, and the volleyball players, they don't know where the ball is going to go. So they're in what's called the ready position. Their knees are bent, their arms are in front of them, and they're waiting for the ball to come. The reason they're in the ready position is because they have to be, well, ready for the ball to be passed to them at any time. They never know when's the ball going to come, when's somebody going to hit the ball to them. So they're actively ready at all times to bump the ball, to hit the ball back over the net. Conversely, if a volleyball player is not in the ready position, they have no hope if the ball comes to them. If the ball comes to a volleyball player and they're not ready, it's going to hit the ground, and they're going to lose the point. So similarly here, the goal or a clear step en route to the goal is to be ready to hold it together before we have irritation or connection or disconnection or anger, and thereby to avoid slipping into the abyss. I'll talk more about that in a little bit. There's also another one, which is another aspect of it. The second aspect is to continue to bestow goodness. Beyond just guarding our disconnection, which I talked about right now, the pinnacle of remaining connected to others is continuing to take care of other people when they do things that we don't like. The aim here is to put relationships first before happiness and convenience. We are aiming to do nice things for people while feeling irritated or angry towards them inside. To emphasize what we talked about last week, the point is not to swallow our negative emotions or to go numb. Not at all. The point is to put connection as a higher value than our comfort, to get outside of ourselves and to maintain relationships, even though they cause us inconvenience or distress or even pain to some degree. Fortunately, there's so many ways to take care of other people when they're irritating us. You can smile at somebody. Somebody cuts you off on the street when you're driving and say, have a great day. You know, you should be blessed. Somebody's annoying or annoyed when they come back from work or from school, give them something to eat. Sit down with them, smile at them. If a stranger does something you don't like, you can always wish them well. You can pray for somebody. Prayer is good because you don't even have to interact with the person. It's kind of easy. It's a bit of a cheat. You can just pray for them, do something nice for them behind their back. Now, any one of these options or many others, however you choose to do this, to continue to bestow goodness, the key is to do so while you're upset. Now, if you have to simmer down for a minute or two, okay, you know, that happens. But the idea here is to overcome our tendency to disconnect. Conversely, if we completely wait for our temper or our anger or irritation to subside, then we're missing out on the point. Because the idea is to inculcate this value of taking care of other people while we are irritated, while we are feeling disconnected from them. Feeling disconnected but not acting disconnected. So if you look at handout 10, we just discussed this, that remaining disconnected has two components. There's guarding against disconnection, and then there's continuing to bestow goodness upon people when they do things that we don't like. There's another facet, though, which we talked about last time, which is noticing our disconnection. As we progress in remaining connected to others and continuing to bestow goodness upon them, we actually get better at noticing our disconnection from others. That makes it easier to guard against our disconnection and also to bestow goodness. So therefore, your handout on handout 10 has a cycle, a cyclical relationship between these. So in terms of an exercise going forward, I'm going to recommend the following. It's a 2-minute brief visualization exercise, and we're going to call it remaining connected to others. For 15 seconds, remember a time in the past when another person triggered you, they caused you anger, irritation, resentment, or pain, and a time when you responded with disconnection. Vividly remember it for 15 seconds. Then, for another 30 seconds, think about that moment, what the person did. What did they do? Where were you? What about what they did was so upsetting? And what effect on your life did it have? Then for another 30 seconds, think about how you responded. How did you disconnect? What did you do? Did you yell at them? Did you scream at them? Did you cut them off? Did you say a nasty word? Did you cause them financial damage? Was it something worse? And finally, the last 30 seconds, think about what they did and imagine what would have happened had you not disconnected. Picture them doing just what they did without any changes. But this time, imagine yourself guarding against that disconnection, being ready, like a volleyball player, to bump the ball, being ready to not let that hit the ground, and continuing to bestow goodness upon them. And that's the exercise. It's even less than 2 minutes. And once a day, I'm going to recommend that you do this visualization exercise to remember a time when somebody caused anger or irritation, and then to think vividly about the event. What did they do? What effect did it have on you? To get upset about it, if you will. And then to think about how you responded, to recall what you did to disconnect. And finally, and most importantly, to go back and to picture yourself not disconnecting. Picture them doing what they did, and this time you're guarding against their disconnection. You're ready not to react. And you're ready to be proactive instead of reactive and to continue to bestow goodness upon them. And that is the exercise that I'm encouraging you to do. And your new chart has, as usual, charting on it, and it has three exercises 10, 9, and 8. 10 is remaining connected to others that we spoke about today. 9 is noticing our disconnection, which is the number of times that we disconnect from other people every day. And number 8 is providing for other people's needs, where we're getting outside of ourselves and we're actually not only noticing but taking care of them in some small way on a daily basis. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of session 10 and the end of our second module on interpersonal connection.